Well, you would have thought it would have been an easy choice. That Moses, who had Joshua as his assistant for all those years, Joshua followed him around. Moses was Joshua's hero. He followed him around. He was his assistant. He went up to the mountain of God with him and stopped partway up while Moses went all the way up to see God, be with God, and he received the Ten Commandments. So it would have been an easy choice, right? Why not Joshua? Why doesn't Moses just say it's going to be Joshua? But that's not what he did. If you turn to the book of Numbers, chapter 27, dropping down to verse 15, this is what we read. Then Moses spoke to the Eternal, saying, "May the Eternal, the God of spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation who will go out and come in before them, and who will lead them out and bring them in, so that the congregation of the Eternal will not be like sheep which have no shepherd." In other words, he knows he's going to die. You, God, appoint a man over this congregation that's going to go out and in before them, who's going to take care of them, who's going to lead them to the land of promise, and so on. I want you to do that, because he knows he's going to be in his place. So the Eternal said in verse 18, this is Numbers 27, verse 18, that the Eternal said to Moses, "Take Joshua." Whoa! Surprise! "Take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him." So with all that, you notice Joshua was with Moses. Joshua followed Moses. Joshua was one of the ones who stood up to the congregation and said, "No, no, we've got to go in, have faith. God's going to deliver us. He's going to give this land into our hands and give the inhabitants into our hands. Don't be afraid. No matter how big they are, we can go in and take it." And he stood steadfast in the face of the other 10 spies who said, "No, it's a terrible land. It's a land that eats its inhabitants. It's a land that devours its people. If you can't do it, the people are like giants, will never survive." And Joshua stood with Caleb. The two of them stood fast against even the majority of the congregation. And the congregation said, "Get out of the way. We're going back to Egypt. We're not going to go in. Get out of the way. We're going to kill you." And so only when God's cloud came down over the tent of meeting did the people all of a sudden stop and realize they're not going to do it. They weren't going to stone them. But Joshua wouldn't give up. He would not bend. He wouldn't bend in the face of the vast majority. He didn't just go along for just going along. He stood on principle and he stood in his faith and he would not compromise it. So the Lord said, "Take Joshua, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him and have him stand before Eleazar the priest and stand before all the congregation." Now, I assume Moses wanted to be absolutely sure. And you know, you can appoint a friend. You can appoint somebody who's with you all the time. You can appoint somebody you like. You can do that. But that's not what Moses did. Moses said, "You know, God, I want it to be your choice. I want you, you who know the spirits of all flesh. You know what's in people. You know what they are. I want you to appoint the man that's going to do this. I don't want to do it." So he was sure that it was God's appointment. And he stood before Eleazar and before all the congregation and commissioned him. He said, "Commission him in their sight." So all the congregation will know that he has been chosen by God. "You shall put some of your authority on him in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey him. Moreover, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Eternal. At the command they shall go out, and at his command..." Okay, "at his command they shall go out, and at his command they shall come in, both he and the sons of Israel with him, even all the congregation." So Moses did just as the Eternal had commanded him. He took Joshua, he set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. Then he laid his hands on him and commissioned him just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. So he was commissioned. He got the approval of all the congregation. They saw who was going to be replacing Moses. It was Joshua. You see the ordination that happened in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 31. You know, Deuteronomy is the place where Moses dies. I mean, he doesn't go on. And after Deuteronomy, we see Joshua is the very next book in the Bible. So in chapter 31 of Deuteronomy, beginning in verse 1, so Moses went and spoke these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old. I am no longer able to come and go. And the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross the Jordan. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy these nations before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua is the one who will cross ahead of you, just as the Eternal has spoken. So he got God's approval. You see in Numbers, he got God's approval. Here in Deuteronomy, he said, God, he was ordained. You saw that. We laid hands on him and everything. And so he's the one that's going to go ahead of you, just as the Lord has spoken. And the Eternal will do to them just as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and to their land when he destroyed them. The Eternal will deliver them up before you, and you shall do to them according to the command which I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Now the word strong means, it can mean strong, it can mean stout, it can mean bold, it can mean alert. You have to be strong, you're right on top of everything. Alert, you know, courageous, bold. Okay? And do not be afraid or tremble at them, for the Eternal your God is one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. You know, that's a quote in the New Testament too. God will not leave us nor forsake us. You remember, he will not fail you nor forsake you. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Eternal has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Eternal is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. So this is the challenge. This is what Joshua was told. He was supposed to do that. He was going to do that. He was appointed to do that. Moses had to be sure. It's you, God, who's chosen him. In chapter 27, back to chapter 27 of Numbers, Numbers 27, verse 22, Moses did just as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest, before all the congregation. He laid his hands on him and commissioned him just as the Eternal had spoken. So we see this commissioning, this absolute passing of authority and power from Moses to Joshua. Chapter 34 of Deuteronomy now. Chapter 34, beginning in verse 9. Now Joshua the son of Nun was filled with the spirit of wisdom. He was very wise. He had a lot of sense of what to do. We'll see that as we go through in the book of Joshua. For Moses had laid his hands on him, and the sons of Israel listened to him, and he did as the Eternal commanded Moses. Since that time, no prophet has arisen in Israel like Moses, who knew the Eternal, whom the Eternal knew to face. For all the signs and wonders which the Eternal sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants and all his land, and for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of Israel. I mean, there's no, you know, from that time, there was no prophet like Moses. Who was the prophet like Moses? Jesus Christ, that's it. He came later to be the prophet that was like Moses. Next verse in the Bible, the very next verse. I just read you Deuteronomy, okay? The very next verse in the Bible is Joshua 1 and verse 1. Okay, we just read verse 12 of Deuteronomy 34, where it said, "In all the mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight, there was no prophet like Moses." The very next verse in the Bible is Joshua 1, verse 1. Now, it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Eternal, that the Eternal spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant. He was Moses' servant. That's what he's called. He was that. He had been that. He had been that from the time he was young. He had been that in the early days in Egypt. He continued to be that all the way. All the way till Moses' death. And so here's what God says. Joshua 1, verse 2. Words that none of us like to hear ever. Moses, my servant, is dead. You don't like to hear that about anybody you know. You don't like to hear that about anybody you love. You don't like to hear those words about anybody that you've been with, anybody that you have interacted with, anybody that you've had good feelings for, anybody who's done you good, anybody who's been kind to you, anybody that you related to. You don't like to hear those words. Joshua now heard them from God himself. Moses, my servant, is dead. A man that Joshua looked up to, Joshua's hero. You remember when Moses said, are you jealous for my sake? Yeah, he was jealous for Moses' sake. Are you jealous for my sake? A man that Joshua had followed, and he knew that Moses went up to talk to God and came down with the tablets in his hands. He knew. And he had been with Moses. He had seen all the things, and now he hears these powerful words. Moses, my servant, is dead. The end of an era. The end of those 40 years in the wilderness. Moses is not going to cross the Jordan. Moses is not going into the promised land. And we don't know how long it was since Moses spoke in Deuteronomy till the time of this statement, Moses, my servant, is dead. Okay? And it said in chapter 34 of Deuteronomy, although Moses was 120 years old when he died, his eye was not dim, nor his vigor abated. Now, what did he die from? You're going to ask, how did he die? So the sons of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab. They all wept. But now the commission, Moses, my servant, is dead. Listen to the next state. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people. One of the ways you deal with life, loss through death, is you get up and you get about doing the things that you need to do. You have to get up and start doing what you need to do. And that's how you deal with it. That's how Joshua was going. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all the people, to the land which I am giving them to the sons of Israel. So he had a commission to conquer the land and take the Israelites into it. He had to conquer, number one, and he had to take the Israelites into it, and then he had to divide it. He divided the land among the tribes, the various tribes. Let's take a look at Joshua now, chapter 1, dropping down to verse 3. And God says this is a most powerful statement. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given it to you. Now the word is I have, it's a past tense. Every place that you already stop, when you go into that land, every place your foot stands on, I've already given that to you. That's yours, it's already given to you. Just as I spoke to Moses, I have given it to you just as I spoke to Moses, from the wilderness of this Lebanon even to as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. All the land of the Hittites and as far as the great sea toward the setting of the sun, going west now toward the Mediterranean Sea, will be your territory. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. In other words, stand in your way. No man will be able to stop you, will stand before you, resist you. You'll be able to go in all the days of your life. Just as I have been with Moses, I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Once again, we see those same words. I won't fail you. I won't forsake you. Isn't that an interesting statement? Over and over. But then you say, well, you won't fail me. You won't forsake me. It's a slam dunk, right? What am I worried about? It's a slam dunk. What does he say? Be strong, stout, deliberate, and courageous. Be strong and courageous. For you shall give this people possession of the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Now I'll be with you. I won't fail you. But you see what faith is. Faith is being strong and courageous. That's what it is. You have to be strong and courageous to have faith in the unseen, in the unknown, in what you don't know 100%. You have to be strong and courageous for that. If you're not strong and courageous, you will not have the faith to go and do what God has asked you to do. And this is what Joshua was told. I'm going to be with you. I won't fail you. Don't worry about it. I won't fail you. But you've got to be strong and courageous. I'm going to give you the possession of land that I swore to your fathers to give them. Once again, verse 7. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. So he knew that they got the law of God. He knew that the God had delivered commandments. You've got to do those. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. You keep God's law. The book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. Then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall have success. Have I not commanded you? Am I not telling you this? Once again, be strong and courageous. Number one, I'm commanding you, so you know it's my will. Number two, I'm told you I will not forsake you, I'll not leave you and fail you, so you know I'm going to be standing beside you. You know, you've got all the power. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. No man shall be able to stand before you. Be strong and courageous. Be strong and very courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, if that's not a boost to your faith, I don't know what it is. But again, you're going out to battle. You're going into a land that is unknown to you. You're going in to fight people that are fairly big. You're going to take a congregation whose parents refused to go in, whose parents wanted to go back to Egypt. Now all these young people that were younger than 20, some of them now maybe close to 40, Joshua's probably now by this time 60 or 70, he was older. He spent 40 years in the wilderness with Moses, and he was one of the leaders in the original spies. So, you know, he had to be in his 60s or 70s, maybe 80. I don't know. So here he comes, and he's being told this, but he knows, I mean, God knows that he's got a congregation of whose parents didn't want to go in. They got frightened. He had to be bold, courageous. He had to give that courage to his congregation. Verse 10, Joshua assumes this command now. Then Joshua commanded right away. Boom. He commands the officers of the people, saying, "Pass through the midst of the camp and command the people." All right. He's already got an organization. You notice he's got his officers, he's got his people, he's got an organized group. He's got a huge army, he's got a huge congregation. He has to have organization. You cannot run that with a huge number of people without some kind of organization. So, you know, you get a small group like we are, you can do it almost with nothing. But with a huge group, you have to have strong, complete organization. So he went through the command the people, and here's what he said. He told, "Pass through the midst of the people of the camp and command the people, saying, 'Prepare provisions for yourselves.'" The King James says, "Prepare your victuals." V-I-C-T-A-L-S, victuals. Which, it means your supplies. Prepare your provisions. What's a provision? Get your food ready. Get your water ready. Get your things for camping ready. Get your stuff when you're on the trail ready. Get your provisions. You're going across here and you're going to fight. Prepare your provisions. For within 3 days, and you got 3 days to get all the stuff that you're going to carry, you are to cross this Jordan. So here's your time limit. Here's your timeline. Everybody knows it. To go to possess the land which the Eternal your God is giving you to possess it. 3 days now we're going to have to go across. Now, one would say, I want to ask the question, is that a lack of faith? I mean, Joshua's telling, prepare your provisions. I mean, God says, I'm going to be with you. God says, I'm going to lead you across the Jordan. God says, I'm going to do it. God says, I'm going to... And yet, you're told, get your provisions. Make sure you got your weapons, got your stuff to camp, got your stuff to eat, you got your food. I mean, if you had God on your side, why do you need to prepare anything? Can't God rain down the manna again? Or can't God bring water out of flint and stone? Can't God do all that? Why do you have to go so far if you're trusting God? Is that a lack of faith? Well, I don't think so. It reminds us that God will work miracles for the Israelites going across the Jordan, as he did in other ways. But that he does not do miracles for the things he has given within our power to do. I have asked this question to people from time to time. If you had some food in front of you and you said, "God, please feed me. Please, please feed me this food. Please reach down, God, and just put it in my mouth portion by portion. Please, God, please, I beg you. I just want you to do it for me, God, please." I am fairly convinced that if you did not reach and touch that food, that you would probably starve to death. That God wouldn't do it. See, God has put things in your power. And God doesn't want us to become lazy, irresponsible. He wants us to do our part. He's given us certain strengths, certain abilities to do things for ourselves. God's miracles are not meant for us to become lazy or irresponsible. Therefore, what we couldn't do. Now, what they couldn't do was part the Jordan. What they couldn't do was part the Red Sea. What they couldn't do when they were in the wilderness is find food everywhere. They couldn't do it. You know, they were traveling, so he gave them manna. What they couldn't do was to bring certain water out of a desert area. So God did miracles. But he says, get your provisions ready. I don't want to. I think God will give me provisions. Well, you'll probably be one of the ones going down like a fly. I mean, you won't make very far into the new land of promise because you're not going to follow. Prepare your provisions was the order, and they had to do it. Now, verse 12, chapter 1, Joshua chapter 1, verse 12. To the Reubenites and the Gadites, and to the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. The Eternal gave you rest and will give you this land. Now, this is before they came into the land. On the other side, they came before they got into across the Jordan land. There was a portion of the land that reached out complete, very far east. Remember, they were going to inherit the land east of all the way to the Euphrates, all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. Well, there's a portion of that land that was east that they didn't have to cross the Jordan to get to. During that time, I'm just going to summarize that, I won't turn to all the passages. During that time, they fought for it. And the Reubenites fought for it, the Gadites fought for it, half-tribe of Manasseh, and they loved that land. They loved that. And they said, can we have this land? Can we have this? This is good land. And promise us that we've got that land. That's our land before we ever go. They got their inheritance of that land before they crossed into the Jordan. Crossed the Jordan into that other place. And Moses said, okay, but you can't now just rest in that land and not help support your other Israelites. You've got to be part of their army. You've got to help them. So here's Joshua reminding them that. Let's take a look. Joshua chapter 1, verse 12. To the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the word which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. The Lord your God gives you rest and will give you this land. That's the land they had conquered east of the Jordan. Your wives, your little ones, your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you beyond the Jordan. See, it was beyond the Jordan. Moses gave them that land. But you shall cross before your brothers in battle array. You're not supposed to go back to your land and start farming. Okay, I got our land. I hope the rest of you guys get your land and cross and fight those big people back there. You know, we'll see you later. No, we gave it to you, but you have to go in. You must go in battle array. All your valiant warriors shall help them until the land which the Eternal your God is giving them. Now, they don't have their inheritance. You got yours, you Gadites, you Reubenites, and half of the tribe of Manasseh. Then you shall return to your own land and possess that which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan toward the sunrise. And that was east, or toward on the east side. They answered, now this is how nice they were. They were good. All that you have commanded us, we will do. And wherever you send us, we will go. You tell us which part of the army, how you want us, where you want us in battle array. Everywhere you want us to go, we will do that. Just as we obeyed Moses in all things, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Anyone who rebels against your command and does not obey your words in all that you command him shall be put to death. Well, that's how vigorous they were for Joshua. Anybody doesn't do that. Only be strong and courageous. Keep on going, Joshua. We'll go be strong and courageous. So they definitely were committed, very committed to this adventure. And they were going to lend their armies and their strength with the other Israelites crossing the Jordan to fight for that land. Now, chapter 2 of Joshua is really considered the story of Rahab. Okay, chapter 2 is pretty much, if you want to say, where's the story of Rahab, it's chapter 2 of Joshua. But let's take a look at it and read it together, because there's lots of stuff here, lots of information. Chapter 2, verse 1. Then Joshua the son of Nun sent two men as spies secretly from Shittim, saying, go view the land, especially Jericho. That's the first place we're going to fight. We're crossing the land of the Jordan, right down by the Dead Sea. We're going to cross in, and we're going to, the first city we're going to hit is Jericho. So they went and came into the house. Now, here's what happened. Joshua, very wise, if you're going to fight a war, what do you need? I need information. I need knowledge. I need the knowledge of facts. I need to know how much they have. I need to know how fortified they are. I need to know as much about the weaponry they have. I need to know, you know, this is what we're trying to do down with North Korea. We're trying to find out in America, well, how much do they have? What kind of weapons do they have? How many nuclear warheads do they obtain? And how can they, you know, how strong are their missiles? What kind of army do they have? What kind of weaponry do they have? We want to know all that before we do anything to go to war. You want to know where it is, how they have their places, where do you have to destroy it? You got to know. Joshua says, I want to send spies. I need some information. Now, unlike the former sending spies, remember Moses sent spies. What did he do? How many spies did Moses send? 12. How many is Joshua going to send? 2. Moses' spies went in and had to bring a report back to whom? The whole congregation. This is not that. Joshua is sending these spies in secretly. I'm not telling everybody. I'm not going to tell everybody. I don't want you to report to everybody. I want you to come back and report to me. I want a knowledge of what's going on in that land, okay? So go and view the land, especially Jericho. So they said, okay, we want to go into Jericho. Our first battle is going to be Joshua at the Battle of Jericho. You ever hear that phrase before? Okay. Joshua at the Battle of Jericho. So they went, and they came into the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab, and lodged there. Now, do you think these two guys, let's go in, boy, we're on our own. The first thing we're going to go is to go to a house of ill repute, and we're just going to have a good time and have sexual and physical pleasures. That's what we want. I don't think so. I think by this time, Rahab was out of the harlot business. And I'll give you good reason why I have that feeling. They came there to lodge. You see? They came to a house. It was owned by a harlot whose name was Rahab. But they lodged there. Evidently, it was a lodging house. It was like a bed and breakfast place. It was a place, you know, like a hotel, a motel, you know, bed and breakfast. Come on in. And that's where they went to lodge. You know, nowhere to go. We got to, you know, we made our way over here. It's nighttime. And they knocked on the door. Can we lodge here? Yeah, you can. Now, somehow, talk about good reporting, good reconnaissance. The king of Jericho, the king of this area, found out. It was told the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men from the sons of Israel. Now listen how much information he had. Men from the sons of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land. They're somewhere here. And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab. Somebody must have seen them, knew them, or got with them. Somehow they got all this information and it came to the king of Jericho, who was very well informed of what's going on. We got guys coming in here to spy, to find out. The king of Jericho sent word to Rahab, saying, evidently she had a prominent place for people to lodge. Where do you go to lodge? Well, it's one of the nicer places to lodge. So he said, bring out the men. Evidently somebody saw them go in. Bring out the men who have come to you. who have entered your house. They saw them go in, for they have come to search out all the land. Hey, you took in some boarders. They're not just ordinary boarders. They're not just ordinary travelers. They are here to do us harm, to search out this land, to get a spy. They're trying to figure out what we've got. We want them. But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said to the king's men, or to the king, "Yes, men came to see me. Yes, they came here to me. And I did not know where they were from. It came about when it was time to shut the gate at dark that the men went out. I do not know where the men went." You got to hurry up and go after them right away, quickly, for you can overtake them. You can get them if you hurry up and run, because they left here. They didn't stay. But she had brought them up to the roof, hidden them in the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. Now, I think she was out of the harlot business and into the flax, you see, making clothing or something. She was doing something else. She was doing something else. Because I don't think, even though she's called the harlot, and one would ask one question, well, if she's out of the harlot business, did she truly repent? I don't know if she truly repented yet, because that was her profession before. And the Bible, even in the book of Hebrews, says this in the star-studded names in Hebrews of the great men of faith. We find this in Hebrews 11, verse 31. By faith, Rahab the harlot. In the New Testament, calls her the harlot. Rahab the harlot did not perish. I said, well, why? It's kind of a pejorative thing, you know. Hi, are you Joanne the harlot? Well, you Rahab the harlot. I mean, you know, welcome to our church. You know, I don't think that's. I think Hebrews is quoting from Joshua. And Joshua chapter 2, verse 1 says they came to the house of a harlot named Rahab. So I think in the New Testament we have, by faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. Now I want you to notice how this is framed. She welcomed the spies in shalom, in a peaceful way, with goodwill, with good food, with nice hospitality, putting them up, willing to have them lodge. They were tired. They wanted a place to sleep. They wanted to lodge. And then when they were spotted, she said, "Get up! Hey, you got to get up on the top of the roof. I've got all kinds of flax stuff drying up there. It's light. Get out and get in and among it. Hide inside and around the flax and hide so that nobody can see if they see. And I'll tell them you went there. You left. Now, a lot of people, I know a lot of people, I cannot tell a lie. I will not tell a lie. Yes, where are the men? Oh, I cannot tell. They're upstairs, you know. And I don't think her name would have been in the great people of faith had she said they're upstairs lying among the flax. I don't think her name would have been in, because some people don't understand that it might be a better choice to save their lives with a falsehood than it would be, because she's not hurting the other men necessarily, but if she's just, I don't want to hurt, these are the men of God. Now you'll find out why she did this. All right, so she said, "You hurry up. If you might get them if you hurry and find them. You might overtake them." But in verse 6, but she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax which she had laid in order on the roof. Now there's very, very orderly way, laying on the stalks of flax that would dry. So the men pursued them on the road to the Jordan, to the fords. And as soon as those who had been pursuing them had gone out, she shut the gate. So they shut the gate. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof. And here's her statement. She said to these men, "I know that the Eternal has given you the land. I know this. And that the terror of you has fallen on us." We are terrified. "And that all the inhabitants of the land have melted away before you. For we have heard how the Eternal dried up the water of the Red Sea before you, when you came out of Egypt." Now listen to how much they know about the Israelites. This thing, all this word that came, people started saying, you know, this happened. There were people in Egypt that they got the knowledge of what happened to their army. There were people of Egypt, there were people afterward that got, you know, little Bedouins. The word spread about them. "And when you came out of Egypt and what you did to the two kings of Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, in Sihon and Og, at whom you utterly destroyed." So they heard all about that. "When we heard it, our hearts melted, and no courage remained in any man any longer because of you. For the Eternal, your God," and she knew his name, Yahweh, you were the YHV, "the Eternal, your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath." Now listen to this woman who had been, by profession, a harlot, is now running a lodge, is now trying to earn her living through flax, you know, selling flax, whatever. "And now I know that your God is the only God. He's the true God. He's the God who made heaven and earth. He gave you all this land. He brought you out of the land of Egypt. He did these miracles. We all know that. I know it. Now therefore, please swear to me by the Eternal, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you also will deal kindly with my father's household, and give me a pledge of truth. I need something from you. I know you're going to conquer. Everybody's scared. We can't fight you. We're already terrified. Please give me a pledge of truth. We know this is going to go to you. And spare my father." So she was young enough. Her father was still living. "My mother, my brothers, and my sisters, with all who belong to them, and deliver our lives from death." We know you're going to come in here and you're going to slaughter us. "Give me a pledge. I have been good to you. I have saved your lives. I want you to save me and my family." So the men said to her, "Our life for yours, if you do not tell this business of ours. And it shall come about, when the Eternal gives us the land, that we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. We'll be good to you. You've been good to us." Now, I want you to notice what her statements do. Her faith condemns many of the Israelites. Think about it. Her faith right here condemns all that early generation of the Israelites who came out of Egypt. All those people who actually passed through the Red Sea. They passed through it. They saw it. They saw the Egyptian army drown. And here's this woman who said, I know who your God is. I know he's the Eternal God. He is really the God in heaven. He is God in heaven. He is God in the earth beneath. I know who that is. The Israelites didn't seem to know. Couldn't believe it. "Did you bring us out here, Moses, to kill us in the wilderness, to starve us to death? We don't have any food. We want to go back to Egypt where we had leeks and garlic and onions and fresh vegetables, and you got us out here in this miserable wilderness." And then when they had a chance to go into the land, they refused. We won't go in. No. It's not good. But here's a woman whose faith, whose understanding, truly condemned many of the Israelites. Not only them, but her faith and understanding condemned the inhabitants of Jericho. They all knew. Didn't she say that? We know. We know what happened. We're terrified. But she was the only one that was able to say, your God is the true God. Your God is really the God in heaven, the God in earth. None of the other Jerichoites, or whatever you call them, inhabitants of Jericho, said that. None of the others said, yes, you know, we know this guy. Why don't we just, you know, surrender? Why don't we acknowledge their God? She said, I acknowledge you, God. I've dealt good with you. Please deal good with me. Please deal good with me. You see, in the book of James, chapter 2 mentions Rahab. In the context of faith without works, he's talking about faith with works. This is the context. And I'm going to pick it up in James 2, chapter 2, verse 25. And in the same way, James asks, was not Rahab the harlot, once again they call her Rahab the harlot, you know, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? For just as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. So James is trying to make a point. She demonstrated her faith by her protection of those spies, by sending them out in a different way. She demonstrated it. This was Rahab. And you'll find later on, in the time when it came for her, her family, you'll find later on that Rahab was not only a woman of faith, a woman who believed, a woman who understood, but she was a powerful force in also converting her own family. We'll talk more about that in our next sermon.